You are listening to Words from the Servants, a podcast produced by the Servants of the Word, an international ecumenical brotherhood of men living single for the Lord. You can download this podcast from our website or access it on iTunes or any other podcasting apps.
Well, good afternoon, brothers. It is very daunting to speak to men holier and more erudite than I. The inspiration came from a sense that Ken shared with some of us at the International Planning Group meeting. His keywords were relevance and irrelevance. A sense that for many of us individually, but also corporately, the Lord, the way I put it, is in the process of refounding our self-understanding, of having us capture anew or make peace with the fact that who we thought we were going to be, we are not. Individually or as a brotherhood. And so I thought I wanted to share with you some lessons from the life of Jacob. So what I'll do is I'll run through quite quickly and sort of helicopter view the life of Jacob. You might want to reread it sometime this week. It's only 10 chapters in the book of Genesis. And then I'd like to draw on some lessons. So the story of Jacob, of course, starts with Rebecca being the wife of Isaac, not being able to conceive, and at some point Isaac prays, and it says, you know, she conceived, and the children were struggling in her womb, and she said, if it does, why do I live? So she went to inquire to the Lord, and the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples born of you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The elder shall serve the younger. So right from the start, even before the two are born, these twins are born, there's a promise that they're going to struggle, and so much so that Jacob comes out second, you remember, but he grabs on to Esau's heel, and that's why his name is the grabber, or Jacob, which is what Jacob basically means. And if you look at the early life, they're very different. I mean, Esau is more like a farmer and hunter, and you know, today we'd say he's a jock, whereas Jacob is much of a nerd, a mama's boy. She always has tips for him, and also he's more of a schemer. And so at some point, Esau comes home and he's famished, and in good brother tradition, Jacob's making lentils, and Esau sells basically his birthright for a pot of lentils. And then the story goes on, chapter 26, Esau marries outside of the clan, he marries Hittites, and it says these two ladies, these two wives that he married, made the lives of his parents very bitter. And then we come to chapter 27, quite a well-known story. Isaac is getting old, and he wants to bless Esau, and so Rebecca finds out about it, because the whole process is around a meal, and so Rebecca basically tells Jacob to cook this up and then sort of disguise himself. And so he goes to his father, and the father first said, the father's blind at this point, but he says, boy, you sort of you smell like Esau, but you sound like Jacob, but anyway, so I'll bless you. And he blesses him. He says, see, the smell of my son is a smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. May God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. So the blessing he gives them is essentially a blessing of prosperity and the blessing of power. And of course, Esau comes home and realizes he has been tricked out of the blessing of the firstborn. And Esau is ready to slaughter Jacob, and so Jacob has to flee. And just before he flees, his father gives, this is chapter 28 now, his father gives him another blessing. And he says, may he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your descendants with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings, which God gave to Abraham. So he gives him a different blessing, a blessing of children, of offspring, and of the land. And this will become very significant as we go on in the story. So he has to flee, and his mother again arranges that he has to visit a relative, Laban. And if you've ever traveled and you don't know anybody, you'll appreciate this story. He's there right at the well. He meets somebody that he knows. It's a relative. And not only is it a relative, but it's a really cute one. It's Rebecca. And so, it's Rachel. And so he falls in love with her and basically asks Laban whether he can marry her and says, absolutely, just serve me for 7 years and you can marry her. And so eventually, the wedding night comes. And of course, you remember in those days there was no electricity. And so it's only in the morning after they've consummated the marriage, he looks and he realizes, this is not Rachel, this is Leah. And as it said, Leah was sort of cockeyed or kind of ugly. And so he complains to his father Laban in chapter 25, and he says, Jacob said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Did I not serve with you for Rachel? Why then have you deceived me? Laban said, it is not so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. So suddenly, Jacob is getting some of his own medicine because he messed with the firstborn right, and Laban sort of won over him. Of course, eventually he also marries Rachel and serves for another 7 years to do that, so he gets both of those wives. He becomes quite prosperous, again, some of it with scheming or at least some clever arranging of things, and eventually he has a falling out with Laban. And so... and he has to flee again. And just before, let me jump back. On his way to Laban, he has, of course, this story. Is a story of the dream where he has a picture of a ladder, and the angel repeats the same blessing that he will have descendants and that he will have the land. But then he adds something else to it and says, "For I will not leave you until I have done that of which I have spoken to you." So God promises him, listen, until I'm done with you, I'm not going to let go of you. This, again, becomes very significant. So now, sorry, I'll jump ahead. So he falls out with Laban, and he needs to flee in the other direction. And again, there's a fair bit of scheming. They steal the household gods. It seems to be that scheming is very much sort of in the DNA of this family. And eventually, it's time to meet Esau. And so Jacob sends some sort of spies or messengers beforehand to see, because it's been at this point 20 years. So you figure, you know, you could have gotten over your grudge in 20 years, surely. But the messengers come back and say, Esau is coming your way with 400 men. So this doesn't sort of bode very well. Bad omen. Looks like he hasn't forgotten his grudge, and he says, okay, now is my time to get even with Jacob. So Jacob does three things. He divides the caravan so that if one gets attacked, at least half of his goods and wives and whatever are spared. He prays, and then he sends lots of gifts to maybe appease Esau. And then we come to this story, very well known in chapter 32, verses 22 following, where it says, the same night he arose, and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything he had. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and Jacob's thigh was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the day is breaking. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, your name shall no more be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and men, and you have prevailed. So he has this wrestling match with the angel, and a number of things happen. One is that his hip is out of joint, so that wrestling match leaves him permanently changed and marred, and his name is changed. And of course, that in the scriptures is always very significant. In some ways, you could say, this is the moment when Jacob really becomes himself by becoming Israel. He becomes the man he was meant to be, and he gets blessed. And right after that, he actually goes and meets Esau. And the meeting goes very well. Esau is actually more friendly than expected. And what Jacob does is he gives Esau a lot of... a lot of goods. He says, accept, I pray, my gift that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough. So it gives him lots of money and wealth. And then he addresses him. He says, let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I will lead on slowly, etc., etc. So he addresses Esau as his Lord and speaks of himself as a servant. And what some of the rabbis say is that essentially what's happening here is that Jacob is giving back the blessing that he stole. Because the blessing that he got from his father was wealth and power. And he says, I don't need the wealth. I don't need the power. I can be your servant. You can be my Lord. Because that wasn't really the blessing that God intended for him. The blessing that God intended for him was that of offspring so that he could become the father of a nation and bring them into the land. And then the story ends. He goes back to Bethel, the very place where he had the dream, and he puts up a stone, and there God renews the promise to that he made originally. So this is the basic story, and I hope I can draw out a few lessons for us that, of course, vary depending on how old we are and where we are in the process of the service of the Word. The first very comforting lesson for me is that God works with very raw material. I mean, both Esau and Jacob are really, I don't even know that they're diamonds in the rough, or they're just rough, you know. the other lesson, of course, is you can screw it up. Esau, you know, does a lot to actually screw it up. But the other thing you see is that right from the start, God has promise, calling, and anointing, whatever you want to mention it, that is specific for Jacob. It's a blessing. The challenge in a lot of the story, the first 20-some years, is that both Esau and Jacob want to be somebody else than they actually are. Especially Jacob is trying to grab Esau's blessing. He wants to be something that he isn't. And surely some of us can identify with that notion that the grass is greener on the other side. I'd wish I had his gifts. I wish I could write music like him. I'd wish I could be as pastorally gifted, as evangelistically clever, whatever. And the challenge is always, do I accept what God has for me, or do I actually want to be something else? The other challenge sometimes is, even when I know what God wants from me, do I wait to receive it, or do I grab for it? And Jacob is called the grabber because for so long he's actually trying to grab it for himself. The other thing we see in Jacob's life is that even when you have a call, it takes some time, in fact it takes a long time, maybe even takes all your life, to live up to that call and to really come into that call. And there's a lot of training. Many of you brothers experience that training in the call right now in the formation house, but bad news, brothers, training does not end. Even when you no longer have a trainer, God is still very much invested in our training, in our discipline. And some of that comes through suffering. And many of us have in various ways experienced suffering. And the question is, what does that suffering do to us? Does it leave us better men or worse men? What happens when something comes to us where we suddenly realize this wasn't what I was bargaining for? Because it's a change, it's a chance to get from the Lord what he has for us. This is what I love about this image of Jacob saying, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. In the midst of crisis, in the midst of difficulties, in the midst of confusion, saying, I want to find God in this. And, God is very, as he says to Jacob, he's also very invested to not let us go until he has accomplished all that he promised that he would do. But it sometimes requires humiliation, like Jacob humbling himself before Esau. That whole wrestling imagery is really crucial. I mean, and of course, lots of spiritual writers have spoken of that there is something about wrestling with God, my will and his will. And, there's an initial one where we sort of say, okay, Lord, you Lord of my life. But especially when our lives don't sort of turn out the way we expected them, that another wrestling comes along. Some of us losing our jobs, or our jobs not going in the right direction. What do you do in that situation? Do you give up, or do you wrestle with God? Do you persevere? You know, Israel, I mean, one translation is you wrestled with God. Another one is you persevered. You hung in there. And that whole story of the 20 years with Laban is a story of Jacob persevering and allowing God's discipline to really make him who he's supposed to be. And the change of name, of course, is very crucial. And you see that he's suddenly dealing directly with his brother Esau and not deceitfully like before. One of the Jewish writers speaks of this last phase in Jacob's life, and it says, "In the past, you struggled to be Esau. In the future, you will not struggle to be Esau, but to be yourself. In the past, you held on to Esau's heel. In the future, you will hold on to God. You will not let go of him. He will not let go of you. Now let go of Esau so that you can be free to hold on to God." And I feel, brothers, certainly for me personally, but I feel maybe for others of us, that is part of the lesson. You know, do we hold on to God, or do we hold on to images of who we think we're meant to be individually, or even corporately? I mean, you know, we talked recently in a meeting, you know, the Alpha Course really is sort of a slightly sexier version of the Life in the Spirit seminar. How come, you know, our name is not everywhere like it is with Alpha? You can become jealous of what other groups are. We thought we were going to have lots of Orthodox brothers in the Servants of the Word. So far, we have none. You know, we can have sort of images of who we are, or what we're supposed to be as the brotherhood, and then suddenly reality shows us something else. Are we able to find God's blessing in that, and are we able to hang on to God in the midst of that? There's a sort of very simple verse at the end of the story of Jacob's life, and it says, the Hebrew is "Vayavo Yaakov Shalem," which one way to translate is, "And Jacob emerged complete," or another way of saying, "And Jacob had peace." Shalem, Yeshvom Shalom. And my hope is, brothers, that whatever phase we are in our journey with God, that we can come to a peace with who we are, that we don't have to grab for something else, we don't have to look across the fence hoping it could be somebody else, but that we also cooperate with the Lord and really wrestle with his purpose for our lives.
This podcast was produced by the Sermons of the Word, a brotherhood of celibate men that is part of the Sword of the Spirit, an international ecumenical network of covenant communities. For similar and other content, visit us on servantsoftheword.org. If you liked what you listened to, please leave us a review on iTunes.